And this is Connections, a chance to meet your North Shore neighbors. News, politics, left, center, right, newsmakers, people, issues, features. Connections on MSO News Sports.
Ready? Hello there. Once again, I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. This is Connections, and once again, I am technologically challenged, having a real hard time opening Firefox on one of my computers. I don't know why, so I've been trying to troubleshoot that. Then I go to get Connections involved here, and again, Tim Kern's not in studio with me, so I'm a little bit lost pushing all these buttons. But welcome. Welcome to Connections, a program we broadcast here primarily about things on the North Shore. Every Thursday at around 11 a.m., you know, give or take. And today we're gonna step outside our comfort zone a little bit, happily. And I will tell you that we've got a lot of stuff to go here. We're going to be starting with talking with Gloucester Times reporter Mary Marcos. Mary Marcos, I believe, has been on the Times staff for about a year now, and she covers a lot of events, covers all the events on the periphery, that is to say Rockport, the periphery of the Gloucester Times central area. Rockport, Manchester-by-the-Sea, and Essex, but she does a lot of reporting from Gloucester as well, and she will be helping out with the Salem News from time to time, as all the Gloucester Times staff does, and vice versa. So we'll be chatting with Mary about some articles, some reporting that she's done in the last week or so that covers pretty much all three areas, all four areas, really, all of Cape Ann. So we'll be checking in with Mary on that in just a while. Also, Heather Atwood will be by. Now, Heather is involved in a new project called Midterm Midpod, I guess what it is. There we go, Midterm Midpod. And she does it with another lady. And what they do is they go out every other week or so to districts in the United States, contested congressional districts in the United States, that are important to the red/blue voting contingent, I guess. But what she does is she does it from a different angle. And they basically set up potluck suppers in the districts, and they try to talk with Republican incumbents and or candidates, and they do talk with Democrat candidates or incumbents. And she's got a very interesting story today, and she'll also talk about the number 11 and number 10 top 10 in our, it's actually the top 50, but it's a top 10 countdown now of the world's best dishes. So she'll be also mentioning where she's going to be heading next week. So that looks good. And the podcast, their podcast, will be starting soon. I'm guessing in about a week or 2 weeks. So you'll want to listen on that. And then a very special guest today is Barbara Vance of the Big Picture Science Show. And she has a fascinating story to tell about herself, her career, and her involvement in the Big Picture Science Show, which emanates from California out at the SETI Institute. Seth Shostak is one of the hosts on that program, and it's an incredible show. Of course, Seth Shostak, he's a senior astronomer out there. But he also hosts a show with Molly Bentley, who oversees the production of the Big Picture Science Show. So we're going to be talking with Barbara about all of that, and plus we've got some other stuff to mention as well. Don't forget, we have football starting tomorrow here on MSO News Sports. We do have our football schedule posted on the website. If you're listening to the program right now on Channel A, just go up there to the tabs on the top right, and you will see our football schedule. There's also a printable version of this schedule. Tomorrow night, Medford will be at Lynn Classical. That's a 7:30 start. That will be over on Channel A. And on Channel B, we will have Winthrop at Danvers. So for the Medford at Lynn Classical game, Medford just into the Cape Ann League in football, that will be a 7:30 start with Bill Newell and Tim Kearns, and Paul Ingram will join me over in Danvers as we'll be broadcasting that game, Winthrop at Danvers. Plus, we'll have a lot of information up there. We're going to have some a brand new program later on here on MSO as well that will feature video interviews with the participants in this particular weekend setup. Also, on Saturday, big game, Beverly at Lynn English. That's a 7 o'clock start over at Manning Field. And Marty Smith and I will be broadcasting from Hamilton, as we'll cover the Bishop Fenwick at Hamilton Wenham game. That game starts at 2 p.m. It says 1 o'clock on the schedule on the website, but it will actually be starting at 2. So I've got that coming up and much more programming here, of course, as we go out through fall sports on MSO. Bill Newell, I don't know that he ever goes home and sleeps, but he's out on the road all the time. So we have a lot of information. We hope that you'll spread the word. Check it out, MSO News Sports. Of course, you know, we started in sports together many years ago, and we've added the news part to it, and we're having a blast with it. So if you have information, let us know. msonewsports@gmail.com is our email. msonewsports@gmail.com. So we'll take our first break of the day, and we'll be back with our first interview of the day as well. As, again, this is Connections on MSO, and we hope, again, that you'll spread the word about that, too. Be right back.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, back now in Connections with Mary Marcos, Gloucester Times reporter, and a very busy reporter this summer. Mary, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, just fine. And I know that you and Ray have been working on some serious stuff up in Gloucester, and I want to start with that. There's a number of topics I want to ask you about, but recently, I guess it was this past weekend, it was sort of a disastrous day in Gloucester in terms of overdoses. Can you give me a little summary of that, what went on?
Yeah, you know, it's really been upsetting to the community. I spoke with the mayor, and she was just really impacted by it. There were 6 overdoses in 24 hours after a very strong strain of fentanyl came into the city. Police believe it was on Friday sometime. So 5 of those 6 overdoses were able to be saved by using Narcan, the brand name for nasal naloxone.
Mm-hmm.
And the one unfortunately died in a bathroom, actually, in Addison Gilbert Hospital around 10 p.m. on Friday.
What is fentanyl? What is it?
It's a really strong drug. It is it's used medically, but you know, when it's used this way, it's very, very strong. You can accidentally overdose just by coming in contact with it. If you touch it, your skin absorbs it. If you breathe it in, it's a very serious drug. And an even stronger strain of it has come into the city recently. So police are really trying to get any drug abusers to be aware of what is in the city, because it's not a good strain. Obviously, no one wants to be using drugs anyway, but with such a dangerous strain in the city, Chief John McCarthy wanted to make sure everyone was aware of it.
Wow, absolutely. All right, well, the other thing, the tough news is, what's going on with the MBTA now? Is there a change in policy or something or other now that these trains are back online? What is this about? You have to have your ticket ready.
They're implementing more ticket checks. Not anything that they haven't done before, mm-hmm. but they're going to make it more of a daily routine to check for people's tickets. And I've had a lot of people ask me, well, where can I buy my ticket? Especially senior citizens who don't have smartphones and they don't have the app on their phone to buy the ticket. Where do I go? Well, there is a check your location on the MBT website. You can find out where they are sold. And if they aren't sold in the area that you're living in, you can also just pay cash to the checker on the train when you get on it. But the CEO of KCS, David Scorey, I quoted him saying millions of dollars each year are lost because passengers don't pay for tickets. Wow. And I guess they're trying to reduce that amount.
Well, you know, back in the day, way before your time, at the train stations, there was actually a ticket booth. You go in, you buy your ticket, then you had to show the conductor the ticket while you're on the train. So I guess it's a return to the 20th century in one way or another for us old timers. But we'll figure it out, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, Mary,
we'll see.
Some good news. With, you know, you cover all of Cape Ann, including Gloucester, with some major news stories. But one that caught my eye recently was there's a sign. We go to breakfast sometimes at Charlie's Place in Gloucester, and there's a poster in there about a prom dress collection. And then lo and behold, I see this in the paper, and this is a really good story. Tell us a little bit about that up in Rockport.
Well, Jackie Limmer reached out to me about this at the beginning of the summer. She wanted to collect 50 gowns to donate to girls who can't afford a new one but want to go to prom. And actually now she has 116 now. And David Merring of Nori's Cleaners in Gloucester has offered to clean all the gowns just out of the good of his heart, not charging anything for these girls so that they have clean gowns to wear to prom. And it's really going to be helping a lot of young women who want to go to prom this year.
I think this is amazing because I've seen it in other places, other towns. And, you know, as a teacher and as a parent of a recent graduate, it's incredible how much money kids spend on gowns. And I'm talking, they can spend up to $600 for a dress for one night, can't they?
Easily $600 for a dress. I mean, women's clothes are so expensive anyway, but, you know, it's hard to go in and pay that much for a dress for one night, like you said. I mean, how can you justify that, especially for people who don't necessarily have an extra $600 lying around? But that shouldn't mean that the girl can't feel gorgeous going to prom, and Jackie Limmer is really helping make that happen.
I think that's tremendous. Now that you have a phone number in the paper, and I'll mention that. Anyone wishing to make a donation can call Jackie at 978-546-6816. And Mary, I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you know how these are going to be publicized or distributed? How is Jackie going to do that in the future? Do you know?
Yeah, she said she's going to make an announcement on dates when women can make an appointment to come try on and choose a gown. I'm not sure if she's going to have that at the cleaners or if she's going to have it at her own house. She hasn't let me know yet. But when she does, there will be an announcement in the paper, and that's forthcoming. So,
all right.
Stay tuned.
Absolutely. I love it. And then the other feel-good story is on today's front page in the Gloucester Times, and it's about a little young lady in Manchester by the sea who's doing something a little different on her birthday. So maybe you could mention that.
Yeah, this wonderful 8-year-old has decided that she wants to donate her birthday. She thought of the idea. Her mother told me when she's just an avid reader, this young girl. Her name's Madeline. And she was reading this series of books. And in it, one of the characters, the book's titled Bella of the Puppy Place series, but the character, Maria, has a party at an animal shelter and asks her guests to bring presents for the animals. And this is where sort of the idea came from for Madeline to donate her birthday. And her mother didn't even know that this was possible. She didn't even know that there were nonprofits that provide celebrations for homeless children in local shelters. But there are many. And the one that they chose is out of, it helps children in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and New York. It's called Birthday Wishes. And so Madeline has a goal to raise $500, and she recently kicked off her campaign last week on Facebook. All the money raised will go directly to the organization, and she is just an inspiring child, really.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Yeah, beautiful picture. So I want people to go to the today's Gloucester Daily Times right on the front page, and then there's another picture inside with her and her puppy dog. So that's an amazing story. My goodness. Mary, anything else that you're working on that you want to mention?
Yeah, actually, coming up in Essex, there is a movie night and a car show. The movie night is on Friday, and the car show is on Sunday, September 10th. And there's really going to just be cars from all over. So any car fanatics should go check it out. In the movie night, they're playing The Sandlot, and, you know, it's a classic. I love Adam Sandler movies, and it'll be right in the field behind the town hall. And if you don't feel like sitting outside, you can just pull your car right up to the parking lot up there, the upper parking lot at town hall, and watch your movie like a drive-in.
Oh, that's cool. When is this one? When's the movie?
The movie's on Friday.
Oh, that is way cool. Now, have you met Adam Sandler yet?
No.
Oh, well, you know, he's in the area a lot filming movies, so, you know, you got to get an exclusive with him next time he's around.
Oh, I would love an interview with Adam.
That's cool. All right, Mary, listen, I know how busy you are, and I thank you for taking the time to talk with us today on Connections, and we'll check in again from time to time.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Mary. Take care.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at HarringtonTrophy.com.
People come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street, a great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We'll treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
Yes, it certainly is. Well, thank you to Mary Marcos, and I just want to mention that we did the interview yesterday, and so that Gloucester Times article about the young lady from Manchester by the Sea is in yesterday's paper, so I'm sure it's still online, and of course it's in yesterday's paper. Take a look. Just a great story, and I really hope you will support the Gowns program up in Rockport, because it is. I have seen young women at the high school wear previously worn gowns that have been, you know, cleaned and redone and so on and so on, at a fraction of the cost of the original price, and they look simply beautiful. And for one night, you know, to spend $600 plus, I can't believe that you can spend more than $600 on a dress in high school for one night. Ugh. So help them out, and check out, again, yesterday's Gloucester Times on that story. And you will be able to see that for Mary. And again, Mary will be helping out, I guess, for the Salem News for a while. She'll be doing some stories from Peabody, and we look forward to that as well, and we thank her very much for helping us out. So still to come this morning, we have much more in the way of information and interviews. We'll be chatting with Heather Atwood of Food for Thought, who will update us on the midterm podcast. We'll also be checking in with Barbara Vance of the Big Picture Science Show, and you will not want to miss that, I promise you. All right, so stay with us. We'll be right back with our next guest.
MSONewsSports.com is known for connecting North Shore sports fans with local sports newsmakers. Features on teams and players, exclusive video interviews following the big games, live event coverage such as high school football, basketball, hockey, and baseball, live video coverage of the Gloucester Fiesta. MSO also connects you to the area news leaders, mayors, state representatives, state senators, town administrators, city and town elected officials, business leaders, and more. Entertainment features. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Leave a voice message anytime, 978-325-3638. Stay connected to your North Shore neighbors by simply clicking on msonewsports.com.
We are back at a rather noisy Pleasant Street Tea Company today. I say that only because the music is not what I'm used to. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Rick. Yeah, it's not our usual selection, is it?
No. It's usually pretty eclectic, and it's kind of weird. But anyway, we're at the Pleasant Street Tea Company, as we usually are, and Heather has been away for a week, and you went down to, we talked with you last week, from Novi, Michigan, and maybe a quick recap, because you gave us a lot of great details.
Yeah, I was in Michigan's 2nd Congressional District, and we were interviewing the candidates there who were running for the 2018 congressional election. And we did not reach the Republican. That seems to be a theme, I have to say.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that is a theme. So we've covered two districts now. And the theme is that the Republican not only will not talk to us, but will not talk to any of their constituents. So in New Jersey 11, the Rodney Frelinghuysen, the incumbent, has not spoken to a constituent for basically 4 years. And I saw over the weekend they were covering him at some barbecue, and a citizen came up to him and said, "Rodney, why won't you hold a town hall?" And he just stared her down in a mean way. That was the quote in this piece I was reading. Mm-hmm. And then David Trott, who was the incumbent in this district in Michigan I was just in last week, he ran into a citizen in the airport, and that person said to him, "Why will you not speak to us?" And he said, "If you want your congressman to speak to you, move."
Okay, this is a representative republic, huh? Okay,
right.
Very interesting.
So that's a theme, but we did speak to the two Democrats. At this point, there are two Democrats running against David Trott in Michigan. One is Haley Stevens, who grew up in the district and was chief of staff under the Obama administration for running the auto bailout, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And then Fehrood Saad, this lovely woman who also grew up in the district. Her family are immigrants. They're Lebanese immigrants, and they started a meat market in Detroit. And, you know, just a classic American success story. And she also worked in the Obama administration for the Department of Homeland Security.
I love the story you told me about the elderly housing project, when they would have someone come in to talk politics and the ground rules that were set up.
Basically, be nice. Mm-hmm. You can speak about your history and speak about your platform, but you cannot speak about your adversaries. So, adversaries, sorry.
Yeah. Adversary. Well, that's the English word. I'm going to do that on left, right, center. We're going to do exactly that. We're going to take that cue and run with that. One thing I found interesting over the weekend, going to different events, talking with some Republicans, it's interesting how, and I must say it's a turning point for me anyway in terms of observation. Several of my former colleagues and friends who were avid Trump supporters have jumped ship. And some other conservative, I know a lot of fiscal conservatives who are saying it's absolutely scary the way that he is treating the media. And they are saying it's reminiscent of something they saw, you know, back in the 30s. We won't bring it up again. But the fact that local avid Trump supporters are beginning to jump ship leads me to believe that there are further crises coming, I think.
I think so. And these two congressmen I'm speaking of, David Trott and Rodney Frelinghuysen, they clearly have felt a lot of pressure from their communities, mostly around the Affordable Care Act and the repeal and replace. And that seems to really be the issue that has, you know, singed their hairs, apparently.
Well, I think the interesting thing about that is everything, I don't know enough about it, but over the years, and especially this year, I've seen and heard that Democrats out of Washington in Congress have said, yeah, there's a lot wrong with the Obamacare. There's a lot wrong with it, and we're willing to work on it.
Exactly. But the fact that they were, by all accounts, shoving through a really failed piece of legislation and something that could hurt a lot of Americans is the thing that is really ringing in these districts.
Okay, well, I can't wait to hear this stuff now. Do you have any update on when these blogs, these interviews will be available so we can listen to them?
Yes, we are going to West Virginia next week, and that is our third district, and then we are actually sitting down in a podcast studio and really producing these podcasts.
Now, if I'm a neutral voter or an undecided voter, how are we going to hear the Republican side? Do you have any guys, anybody lined up at all who's willing to talk to you?
Yes. Well, this is a problem. We are actually trying very hard to find Republicans in the districts. And there, I spoke to a woman in Michigan who is very much a Trump supporter, very much an anti-Hillary person. And so we have one very solid Republican voice from that community. We're trying to find people from this community. You know, but it's hard. And this is another interesting theme, because we approach these people saying, you know, we are two moms from Massachusetts, and they actually pretty quickly assume we're Democrats. But exactly. But we say we're two moms, and we really want to just talk to you. We really just want to hear how you, what you're thinking about. And there's just this impressive amount of paranoia, is the only word I can say. We went to the Michigan State Fair, and we walked up to the Michigan State Republican Party table, and the people behind the table looked like me, you know, highlighted blondes with red lipstick, okay? So we all look basically the same. And we smiled, we introduced ourselves, we said we'd like to talk to you, and their immediate reaction was, who's paying for you? Who's the money behind you?
Of course, of course.
Now, I said to my colleague, Nisi, when Obama was in office for 8 years, if there was a table set up at a state fair with the Democratic Party behind that table, Do you think when someone, a Republican, walked up and said, may I speak to you, do you think they would have said, who are you working for? You know, this is, sure, you have to answer that phone?
Yeah, hold on. Yeah, I've always been suspect of that when they say demonstrators are paid by somebody and, you know, the people come in are paid by somebody. So that's interesting. So
what's interesting to me is their guys are in office. Their guys are running the whole country. They have all the power. Mm. What are they afraid of? Why won't they? Why don't they want to talk to people? What is what's the obstacle there?
So was this did you guys have a potluck? Because you talked to me about that last Thursday.
Yes, we did have a potluck. It was a beautiful potluck in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. It was at a woman's home. She opened her doors to us. Everyone brought dishes. The best one was the Detroit Free Press potato salad.
Ooh, I think we talked about it.
Yeah, right. That's right. Okay. I think I told you that. So that'll be up. There were a bunch of activists at the potluck. We did try to invite Republicans, but it's kind of hard to talk to them, as I said. But the majority of the people at this potluck were working with an organization called Voters Not Politicians, and they are trying to get a ballot question up in November to end gerrymandering. It's a citizens action group that is trying to propose that the state of Michigan has an independent commission deciding these districts, because these districts are so gerrymandered.
Okay. Well, can't wait to hear when the podcast comes out and to see this online and get some reading materials as well. What about to the back to the, we're in the top 50 and we're counting it down now. We're close to top 10.
We are. We're at 11 and 10.
Oh, okay.
So now I did a little research very quickly on 11 and 10 because they are coming from a New England girl and a New England guy. They're a little bit obscure, but let's go with this. I find them really, really interesting. Rendang from Indonesia is number 11. Now, what I love about this dish, and I might have to make it this week, is it comes from a region in Indonesia called Minangkabau. That is western Sumatra. And the most interesting thing about this region is that it is matrilineal. So the family name and land are passed down through the mothers. the mothers to the daughters. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the oldest matrilineal societies in the world. Oh. How do you like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, okay.
So rendang is a ceremonial dish. It's basically beef simmered in coconut milk with lemongrass and turmeric and ginger and all kinds of spices.
It sounds almost edible.
I think it's delicious. Okay. I can tell you that. It's absolutely delicious. And there are four principles to rendang that apply to philosophy. So this is such a complicated dish, right?
I know, it's amazing.
It's just basically stewed beef with coconut milk and lots of really wonderful aromatics. But the meat represents the revered elders. The coconut milk represents the teachers and the poets. The chili in the dish represents the clerics and the religious leaders. And the spice mix represents the people. Isn't that crazy?
I love it because it reminds me of at Passover, this cedar meal, you know, where everything is significant. It signifies something culturally. I love it.
Yeah, I love that, too.
Wow, that's cool.
I know. So this is one of those dishes. Number 10 is a dish from Gabon in West Africa and Angola. It's called chicken mwamba. It is chicken with okra, tomatoes, and chilies, and palm oil. It has lots of palm oil. And a lot of these African stews have been translated in the United States as a chicken dish or sometimes a meat dish with peanut butter. They substitute peanut butter for the palm oil. But this palm oil is a very special thing. It's red palm oil. It's not palm kernel oil. So this oil comes from the fruit of the palm tree, not the kernel. So it therefore has a different cholesterol level, and it's supposed to be much better for you. It's a very red fruit, and we all know that any vegetables or fruits that are really bright in color or deep in color are rich in vitamins.
Oh, yeah, we all know that.
Yeah. So, you know that now.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore...
Well, I retain it is another question.
You know, I was Googling the health benefits of red palm oil, and there are many.
Okay.
So, yet another reason to prepare number 10 on
now,
the world's best 50
these two
dishes.
Are not like potato chips and potato salad. So, give me number 10 again. I love the musical name of it.
Okay, chicken mwamba.
So there should be some music to that. It sounds celebratory.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm sure it's a celebratory dish. Probably, if you have a chicken to put in this chicken mwamba, you're feeling pretty good that week in Gabon. That's what I'm guessing.
Okay, so what's on the agenda now? What's for you next, you and Nisi?
So we go to West Virginia next week. We're going to West Virginia's 2nd District. It's talk about gerrymandering. It's a crazy shaped district. It looks like a caterpillar, and it runs east to west across the state, and it kind of squiggles.
Okay.
It takes 4.5 hours to get from one end to the other. Oop, sorry.
Well, we're getting rings all over the place here today. Do you have to answer that?
No, I don't.
Okay.
So we're going to have to really hustle to cover the whole district, but we are starting in Charleston, West Virginia, on Monday, and we have an
Sounds
interview.
Familiar.
Yeah, right. And we have an interview with Aaron Scheinberg, who is the Democratic candidate running against Alex Mooney, who is the Republican incumbent.
All right, so we'll talk to you on the road next week?
Yes, and hopefully I have lots of great food ideas, right,
sure
West
will.
Virginia?
I'm sure you will. That's Heather Atwood. This is MSONewsSports.com.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We'll treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
Continuing now on Connections, I'm Rick Moore, and my special guest is Barbara Vance, who is, let me see exactly what her title has. I'm not sure it still is.
Barbara, what is your title? Because you're still listed on the City Institute website as the Operations Manager of Big Picture Science.
That's correct.
All right.
That is my title with the radio show, yes.
Okay, well, I got to get into that because this is absolutely fascinating on how technology works and all this. But first of all, whenever we have someone new on our program, we like to find out a little bit more about them personally rather than on the Internet. Give us a little idea of your background, maybe your education, and how you got to where you are.
Well, it's like the Beatles. It's a long, or the Grateful Dead, I guess. It's a long, strange road. I'm actually a librarian. So I went to library school. I have my master's in library science, and I worked in a library for 26 years. Started as a page and worked all the way up through being the automation librarian, which means that I installed the library automation system when, you know, card catalogs went out and computers came in. And then I maintained those systems and other computer systems at the library for some years. And then I got tired of doing that. So I went to a startup company right before the dot-com crash. So you have to realize that this was, you know, back in the 90s, which may be old history for
some of the kids, yeah, for sure. But not for us.
Yes, I mean, they probably don't know what a card catalog is, for example. But that company was actually, since this was pre-Google, hard as that may be to believe, they were trying to write searches to read news feeds for specific industries. So sort of like doing Google searches before there was Google. Mm-hmm. And the dot-com crash hit, and it went under, and I jumped over to the library automation company that I had installed at my library, and I was the circulation product manager there for 3 years until I started volunteering at the SETI Institute in Mountain View, California. And they basically wrote a job for me in the fundraising department to be a researcher for them. And so I left the job at the library automation company and started working at the SETI Institute. And that's how I got to work there. And that's how I met the people doing the radio show. I had met Seth at a class before that, but that's where I got to meet Molly, and when we brought in Gary, you know, our other producer and, mm-hmm. you know, master of voices, I just started helping them out because they're focused on doing the interviews, putting the audio together, and then I was doing the getting it out to all of the stations and the distribution.
All right. We'll get to those guys in a minute. I want to know more about your thing. So where were you working primarily when you were doing library? And then when you went to the automation, where were you?
Well, I'm a California girl, so I went to San Jose State for both my undergraduate and graduate degrees. And then I was working at a city library in Santa Clara, California.
Mm-hmm.
Where I did all of my library work. And then the library automation company is in Emeryville, California, which is by Berkeley, up in the East Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to the SETI Institute, that's in Mountain View, which is down closer to San Jose.
Yeah, I hope to visit someday. But I tell you, well, when you went from library to automation, obviously, with technology, how did you learn the technology yourself? Was it all just following software, or did you have to learn systems and so on?
Well, some of it was going out and looking at what systems were out there when we were looking at what library system to implement, because there still are several different varieties.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had a committee, and we went and looked at various systems. But I also, since I knew, we knew that this was coming because, as you may recall, Apple was putting Apple IIe computers in schools, which was a very smart move on their part. So kids were starting to learn about computers even back in the early 90s because of these computers that Apple put in. So we had those, you know, kind of small-brained computers in our library.
Uh-huh.
And we could just see that this was coming. And so I sort of had an aptitude for that. And so it was sort of known that I was going to be the one that would be running the system when we got it, which, of course, you got trained by the company on how to use it and so mm-hmm. forth. But then I also, on my own, started taking some network administration classes from University of California, Santa Cruz Extension, which was actually located in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. which is, of course, where I was working. So I actually got a certificate in network management on my own.
Wow.
Learned this because I knew that it was going to become important to know about, you know, what is a server and, you know, how does the net actually work. And I was going to have to be repairing computers and hooking them up and doing all that. So I wanted to have a background.
You know, my aptitude.
I was doing.
my aptitude for this stuff was such that, and I want to ask about library science in a second, but was when the smartphone came along, I remember saying to my wife, who in God's name wants a phone with a camera in it? Nobody's going to buy that. So I got a lot of foresight too, as you can imagine. But,
well, I can top that because I went to a seminar about this thing called a facsimile machine.
Yep.
And it was, so that's how old I am. And it was like, well, it's kind of interesting, but I don't see how we would use it in the library. And of course, that was totally off base.
Exactly. Well, you know, as a math teacher, I used to marvel at, I do marvel at the change in how at least school libraries are operated, in that the emphasis now is so much more on technology than it is on hardcover. And, of course, you and I remember combing through college libraries, having to go up through the stacks, as they were known then, and climb up, you know, go 11 flights of to get a magazine. And, you know, but with the change now, it's just fantastic. And it's something that maybe when you're on top of it as you were, is it easier to stay on top of it now because there are still changes coming up? You know, just like the tide comes in.
Well, I'm not on top of things like computer networking and, you know, I implemented the first website for the library, but, you know, I never got deep enough into really, you know, the coding or CSS style sheets and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. I do stay up with, I'm still a member of the American Library Association. And I still, you know, get library literature that I look through, but I'm not a practitioner anymore.
You know,
going back to a point that you were just saying, though, specifically for libraries and technologies and going to the stacks, they now have robotic systems in libraries, like in big college libraries,
yep.
where they will put their books into bins, and it's, you know, in the computer about where the bin is, and then they just have a little robotic arm that says, you know, go find this bin.
Unbelievable.
And often gets it and drags it back and puts it in the bin, and it goes up through this railroad track and goes and delivers it wherever.
Unbelievable.
It's really fun to watch.
I'm just shaking my head. My daughter is headed to Drexel University in a couple of weeks, and I know that they've got a big library, and I'm just picturing that. And you know what's funny? I was just thinking, you know, when I interview people, I always ask people, do you keep up with the literature? Man, that's something else when you ask a librarian that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoa.
Because there's two parts of it. Because,
yep.
of course, there's the technology and the business of libraries, and then there's the materials. And that's, of course, what's really mm-hmm. fun. So I get a lot of the magazines and stuff because I want to see what the new books are.
Of course, yeah. So you must be, yeah.
Get to see them before they're published. So.
Now, you know, as a little personal question here, do you like e-books or you prefer the hard copy?
I actually do most of my reading now on my iPad with the Kindle app
mm-hmm.
because I don't have any more room in my house for books. And it was always, you know, if I was going on a trip, it was much more, what 20 books am I going to bring and how am I going to pack them? And I don't have to do that with the ebook. But I know a lot of librarians, you know, still are kind of suspicious of that. And it's really a hard model for libraries because how do you restrict the use.
Right.
Right? When you check out a book and then they bring it back, you know, they could share it while it's at home or whatever. But, you know, they had to do a lot of thrashing around with the license.
Oh, yeah.
For e-books.
I can imagine.
They've gotten figured out now, but... that was a hard thing.
I love the idea of when you finish a book at night, if I'm reading in bed, then I can just I can go shopping and get a new one right there without ever having to turn my head off the pillow. It's pretty cool. Barbara, let me ask you... go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that, though, every once in a while, it's like, okay, I'm going to put this down and get a real book. And that's actually what I'm doing now. I'm reading an old paperback copy of a Rex Stout mystery.
Okay. I have to do that, too. I have what I call my outside books that I don't want to, you know, if I'm going out in the sunshine, I got to have a hard copy. So I get that. Now, let me ask you first of all, let me explain to our listeners what the big science picture, the big picture science show is. I'll get it out there. It is a radio show that is based at the SETI Institute out in California. And, of course, for those, the great unwashed, SETI is the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. And my interest in this came about many, many years ago when I first saw on one of the great teacher DVDs, I forget the magazine that you used to get, and you could buy these lectures. And I bought Seth Shostak's lectures, and I became enamored of how he taught. I read his books. And then during the course of teaching astronomy in high school, I had a question that I actually emailed Dr. Shostak, and he actually emailed me back. So then I went to the SETI Institute online, became a member, and I'm just fascinated by this whole thing. And I actually got to meet Frank Drake a long time ago, for those who know Dr. Drake. I got to meet him back in the 90s. But how did you get involved in this?
Well, I have been interested in science, although I'm a humanities, you know, major. And I have to admit, math is my absolutely worst subject in the world, which is one reason I didn't go into science. But I've been interested I'm interested in all sorts of things, and science is one of them. So I'm one of the kind of librarians that's sort of a grazer. So I have a superficial interest in a whole ton of things, and then I go deeper into some other things. And science and astronomy and SETI is one of those things. And so when the Planetary Society started up, I became a charter member of that.
Me too.
And, you know, they had their Project Serendip, which was a SETI project, and that was very interesting. And so I supported that. And the Planetary Society and the California Academy of Sciences in San Francisco did a seminar, or a panel discussion anyway, about finding ET. And Seth was one of the speakers, Doug Vakoch, who's now with METI, which is the Messaging of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and some other people were there. And it was just a lot of fun. And, you know, Seth was a very compelling and very, very funny.
Yes, yes.
If your listeners haven't heard the show yet, Seth is a very, very intelligent and very witty and very funny guy. And so that was very fun and interesting. And I went because I was already interested in the subject. And then Seth actually was teaching a few classes at the Cal Academy. And so I took a couple of those. And then something that your listeners who may know about a little bit about SETI may not know is that the SETI Institute is not the one that does SETI at home. And I was under the misapprehension that it was, and I started emailing and talking with SATs and found out that they were two totally different things.
Mm-hmm.
SETI at home is UC Berkeley's project and not the SETI Institute's
okay.
project. So that gets confusing a lot. And then, you know, I offered to come start volunteering at the Institute, and that led them to, you know, hire me on as a full-time employee in the fundraising department, and I was doing that for some time, and then I moved 2009, I moved into the grants department because the SETI Institute is not just looking for extraterrestrial intelligence, it's looking for life in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of our, you know, we have a, the SETI group is actually a very small group. There's not a lot of, you know, not more than maybe 20 people in the whole world who do SETI. But there's a much larger group, certainly, you know, 60 or 70 people at the SETI Institute that are scientists working on what's called astrobiology.
Right.
And that is looking for the conditions where life could exist, what kind of life might be out there, where could it live, are there microbes or other things in the oceans under the ice in Europa, was there anything ever alive on Mars, could there still be life on Mars because they keep finding water and things like that. So most of our scientists actually work on astrobiology, and they get their money from NASA or the National Science Foundation. So they put in grants for projects that NASA and NSF want to fund. And I was the grants administrator who helped get their proposals submitted and then help them remind them to do their reports and things that they do annually back to the funder.
So, I didn't realize there was... I didn't realize there was another layer of that, with the actual just search for life, period. And, with the exobiology and the number of exoplanets that are being discovered daily, reminds me of that I Love Lucy show where the conveyor belt was going on and she was popping the candies into her mouth. I mean, that's how fast these planets are coming along. But that is absolutely fascinating. And one thing that worried me all these years, I remember a long time ago back in the, I think it was the 80s or 90s, Senator William Proxmire gave the SETI Institute, or SETI in general, it might have been with the Planetary Society at the time, the fickle finger of fate, and said, "What a wasted enterprise that is." So I know you're not actively involved in the fundraising now, but is it going along fairly well? I hope.
It could be better. It could be better. So there's a couple of things. So one, yes, while most of our scientists are funded by, NASA grants, SETI is not funded by that. So the actual looking for intelligent life is not funded by the government. So that's all private funding.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it sort of makes me a little annoyed because there is an exobiology program at NASA, and they restructured their programs a few years ago. And to this day, it says very specifically, we're not going to fund looking for intelligent life with radio telescopes,
mm-hmm.
specifically.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put in a grant that we will fund for doing that.
Right there in the language. That's amazing.
So that kind of irritates me.
Well, you think? Yeah. I mean, good grief. Lord have mercy.
So still no federal funding. So it's all privately funded. And you may have heard about the Breakthrough Listen initiative that Yuri Milner, the Russian millionaire, has put together. But the SETI Institute is not part of that initiative, unfortunately. So the money that he put up for that does not flow to the SETI Institute. It flows to other places like Berkeley and some of the, Parkes Telescope in Australia and some of those places. But the SETI Institute is not part of that. And even though we helped with information on that. So there's sort of a perception that there's funding coming to us that
right.
we actually are not getting. So it's still very important for, private individuals that are interested in this to come forward and help us out since we are a nonprofit.
Absolutely. We need a few more billionaires to chip in. My goodness. Well, and that finally, it brings me, Barbara, to this, the big picture science program, which is amazing in its own right. Now, how are you involved in that? Because you're not actually in California at the moment. So how are you involved with that?
Well, I did retire back about almost a year ago now, but I still am on contract with the Institute, mostly for the radio show, but for some other projects that I work on for various departments at the Institute. And So what I'm mostly doing now is I'm a station contact, and I'm trying to do marketing for the show. So, for instance, talking to you about your station and, you know, seeing if you're interested in carrying our show and offering the we offer, like, custom promotional advertisements you can put on your station and that sort of thing. That's what I kind of do now. What I was doing when I was in California is taking the audio that Seth and Molly and Gary produce and sending it out to our distributors for stations to acquire. So on the NPR satellites, since it mostly goes to public radio stations, and a couple of other distributors also putting the podcast out on iTunes and out on our RSS feed so that anybody can download it and listen to the podcast. So that's kind of what I was doing back there, and now I'm Gary does that part now, and I do more of the, you know, station liaison and marketing from here, from Alabama.
I think it's amazing the way the whole thing is tied together, you know, through technology, the internet, and so on. And I think there are the best is still yet to come. So what's in the future now for you, Barbara?
Well, for me, enjoying being near the beach, and which I could never afford to do in California. And, you know, I enjoy continuing to work with the people that I work with at the Institute. In fact, we're having a little radio show staff meeting later this afternoon, so I'll get to talk to everybody. And, you know, just trying to enjoy life and promote the radio show.
Keep moving. I know. I love it. Well, I'm envious because you work with people that I've admired for so long, and I did get to meet a bunch of them when Project Beta was instituted in Massachusetts a few years ago. And anybody who has not listened to Seth Shostak, you just have to, whether you're interested in SETI or not. He gets cut off way too much in these television programs, and it irritates the hell out of me because they don't let him speak. But the big picture, it's right here, the big picture science show. We have it. We post it courtesy of the SETI Institute, and you've got to listen to that program. And certainly, you know, go visit the site. And those of you who got the money, become you don't even it's not expensive to become a member. You could always become a member, and it's just terrific. I can't say enough about it. Anything else, Barbara, you want to mention?
No. I mean, there's incredibly fascinating people at the SETI Institute. We have Mark Showalter, who has discovered more moons than Galileo, and has worked on the New Horizons project. Several of our people worked on New Horizons that visited Pluto and is continuing on. If you've heard of the Kepler Space Telescope that is looking for those extrasolar planets, most of the people working on the back end are SETI Institute employees, and a lot of those will be moving on to the new terrestrial planet finder, TESS, that's coming up very shortly. And then we've got Frank Drake, who's marvelous, and then the radio show staff. So a fascinating place to have been, and a great place if anybody's interested in science to go visit.
Amen to that. And I can attest to, as I said, I met Frank Drake and a bunch of other founders of the Planetary Society. And from my point of view, these guys are absolute giants, but they're also real gentlemen and real people. So it's really cool. You got to visit the SETI. You got to visit SETI online, SETI Institute online. You got to do. I'll link to that. Barbara, I want. I will keep running the program as long as we're allowed to. And I hope that, you know, you'll from time to time keep me in the loop.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. I appreciate it, and I will talk to you later. In the meantime, make sure you wear your sunblock out there on the beach.
I will. Thank you.
Take care, Barbara. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That is Barbara Vance, who is the operations manager of the Big Picture Science Show at the SETI Institute. With that, I guess it's okay to cut myself off. MSO News Sports is what I was saying. I'm Rick Moore. Thank you to Barbara Vance. Really appreciate it. So many more questions to ask Barbara and her involvement with
the Big Picture Science Show, and hope that if you get an inkling and you're interested, support it. It's really cool. Thanks to Barbara Vance of the Big Picture Science Show. I appreciate Mary Marcos of the Gloucester Times stalking by, Heather Atwood as well for stopping by. Not stalking by, but stopping by. There you go. I'm Rick Moore. I do appreciate your listening, and if you're of a mind, please go ahead and you know, you can email us at MSO News Sports. And don't forget, we got football coming up tomorrow, starting here. What is that? I have no idea what that is. Anyway, there you go. Typical mistake on my part. Appreciate it. Take care. Bye-bye.